Hello and welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people at all the things you need to know in the world of innovation, business, design, tech, and culture. I'm Fazlin Iso, and today we're joined by two brand new additions to the Label Sessions expert roster, as well as Nick Sherrod from the Label Sessions team. Hello and welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
So a big welcome to Devalina Dasgupta. Devalina turns leadership ambiguity into cultural clarity, guiding global transformations with empathy, strategy, and guts to say what others won't. Welcome to the podcast, Devalina.
Thank you very much, Fazlin.
Also a big welcome to Sally Poinsett-Nash. Sally builds brands from the inside out, turning leaders into the living, breathing expression of what their company stands for. Welcome, Sally.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Amazing. So our first topic of the week is that very interesting sort of phenomenon that is now influencer marketing. Mm-hmm. And the question is influencer marketing eating itself? Traditional celebrities like movie stars and musicians are making podcasts and posting content every day. Instant TikTok creators are launching brands for themselves, just like celebs used to. And in one case, even lobbying for nuclear power. The appeal of influence used to be that they were more authentic than traditional celebrities. That meant that working with influencers could help brands seem more authentic too. Now that every celebrity is an influencer, have we forgotten what was good about them?
You know, I think that core of the conversation isn't really about influencer marketing, but it's about how trust is evolving. In the early days, influencers were everyday people sharing authentic opinions. They were more trustworthy than some of the brands. When the celebrities jump in, it blurs those lines somewhat. But for me, it's not about whether celebrities or creators are involved. I think it's the issue that influence has been reduced to visibility. And everyone has their own definition of it. You know, some people view influence as a bad thing. Others are striving to obtain it. It's a bit like the word professional. You know, the work I do with human beings, a lot of them will hide behind professional because it's comfortable. But actually, everybody has a different definition of professional. Same with influence. And I think, you know, in this, the work I do with organizations, we're talking about in-house influencers and using these collectives of leaders to bring the company brand to life. But we never use the word and term influencer externally because of the different definitions that, you know, the trust question mark around those things. And I think influence without trust is short-lived. If you're building your reputation deliberately, whether you're an individual or a company, that's how you're going to sort of get that sustainable influence and evolve it with you as a human being. And from my perspective, you know, the easiest way to come across as trustworthy is to be trustworthy. It's that simple.
It's interesting. I really like that comment about professional, because I also think one of the things that's kind of peculiar right now is the number of people that have accepted that being a personality or finding ways to be visible inside the company and outside the company is really important, doing that online. But they've also... well, they just do it in a way that's very dull. Like there's a kind of professional thing that means that people kind of close up and become this kind of quite dull figure. That then causes all kinds of problems, because I then see lots of people, especially in the kind of B2B brand, enterprise brands and such like, and they're, I've got to be online to tell the story of what's going on in the company. And they kind of are, but they don't get much traction around it just because it's essentially just trotting out press releases in a slightly different format rather than being more human.
Yeah, absolutely not the work I do. You know, creating those company mouthpieces, that it just goes against everything I am and stand for. And I think when in those, you need a third party in there. You know, if someone in-house is doing this, you're going to get a company version of it, which is probably some of the content you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And when there's a third party involved, that person can truly be who they are with those longer term objectives. Mm-hmm. You can then bring that back and sort of reverse engineer back to today and say, well, which aspect of this can we bring to the company brand and have that mutually beneficial exchange, because it makes sense for a longer term career build. You can hear it. So even when, you know, I obviously do sessions with people in the middle of a day, they're in work mode, it's professional time. A lot of them will be in heavily regulated industries, and there's a fear around how they show up.
Mm-hmm.
When something matters to somebody, you can hear the change in their voice, you can see the body language. There's a level of energy behind the things that matter, and it's those pieces I'm pulling out to start to build, you know, a strategy around those rather than just on being a thought leader and a trusted expert.
And I think it's also intuitive, because, I mean, you know, I mean, financial services is one of those classic areas where people quite often will say that they have to act a certain way because it's financial services. But then you look, there's lots of examples of leaders who don't and are very successful, but it's kind of like, kind of intuitively know it's there, but somehow there's something in the...
Yeah, and I think it doesn't all have to be done on LinkedIn. You know, there's certainly things that will be happening. You know, maybe you own your own dinner series and there are things that are happening offline. But you have to have these human points of connection. You can't just connect on the expertise itself.
Yeah, Melina, as someone who's in financial services and obviously a bit of a thought leader yourself, what's your take on the sort of rise of this influencer marketing?
Yeah, so my take would obviously, on particularly this topic, not come from a specialism point of view as Sally, you know, who comes from very deep expertise point of view. But I'm, you know, an influencer and equally a social experimenter and an observer.
So let
me contribute to the discussion on the basis of that. So, you know, going back to Sally and Nick, as you said, you know, when we first started using the word, maybe around 10-ish years ago, about, you know, we started writing social influencer and stuff on LinkedIn. And if I think about what really that meant, it meant two or three things, right? It meant authenticity of voice. It meant authority to challenge perspective. And if I analyze deeper, I would say that that challenge was well received because of the behaviors that they role modeled, because of the journey of struggles that they shared with vulnerability. And there was a deep passion to give back as well, without any vested interest. I think that whole definition is evolving very, very fast and going out of control now. So, you know, in my analytical head, and I, in the last couple of months, I've done a lot of research, particularly on LinkedIn. And if you don't mind, I want to share my three categories of influencers now, right? One is, as you guys said, it is the celebrities who are literally leveraging on their face, their voice, their popularity, pretty much augmented this as their PR strategy, overshadowing real voices and the deep work that other people would do surely out of the sense of giving back and passion, right? But I've also observed how suddenly LinkedIn, for example, from becoming, from where it was, a connection network, has suddenly got people with 200,000 followers, 300,000 followers. And I have also closely observed how some, you know, there's almost a cartel or a nexus, and they support each other with continuous comments. And you can feel this is largely AI backed up, because you can't just sit the whole day and write comments and messages and posts every day, and which is so well crafted. So I think the other two categories, the one category is, I would say, they have the capability and they have the credibility, but they have mastered AI somehow and they have become entrepreneurs now. And so they're completely leveraging that platform for business, right? So here, there is an intention issue. It's not a skill or a credibility issue. It's an intention issue that I'm doing it with a purpose and I don't mind overshadowing others, you know, for the sake of growing my business. The other category is the new generation content creator who started evolving from the COVID days. And some have had the persistence to continue. And I think those are the people who lack skill or the credibility on the topics themselves that they're talking about, because they have, they might not even have 6 months or 1 year of work experience in the industry, but they are giving lectures on branding and professionalism, leadership, everything on earth. Right. So that makes the whole influencer fraternity a bit inauthentic. So, I mean, and I'm wondering now, what are companies like LinkedIn doing in terms of, you know, having the right procedures and policies and the right call outs at the right time on people who are doing 8 hours of LinkedIn throughout the day and growing 200 followers on a weekly basis? So, you know, that's a big question. I haven't found an answer. If somebody can give me an answer, I'm very happy to have it.
Yeah, well LinkedIn is one platform that definitely doesn't know how to do like curating a feed. I mean, that is a mess, the most messy of feeds if you just let the algorithm do its thing.
And we just touched on that, the idea of, leaders using AI as a sort of their main point of how they're engaged and how very obvious it is, and also how detrimental it can be if you're just kind of relying on AI to be your voice.